Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. And we're continuing our discussion on the four temperaments and the flesh that grows out of those temperaments. And again, we're looking at flesh as a crutch. And a crutch is not us. So your flesh is not you. This icky stuff that we're trying to get rid of, these bad habits, they're not you. They are ways that we've developed to make it through difficult situations. Whether we have a lack, we can't cope with something, we can't handle something, or we're those that we're relying on that should have protected us, taken care of us, prepared us, failed. So though we are in the process of getting rid of our flesh by cooperating with God, God's the only one who can remove it. We can only join Him in that and understanding what part is a crutch and what part is not. Sometimes we want to get rid of a crutch and God isn't ready yet for whatever reason. And so we could even be creating a new crutch by fighting Him in getting rid of an existing crutch. So this is an area where we really develop patience by allowing Him to be the one to choose what we're working on. This also greatly affects others around us. So each one of these, again, it's so personal and so unique. The whole goal of what we're doing here is not so you can come up with a little checklist or put yourself in this box and in this category and this is where my main problem is. It's simply to start the process of looking at it, with God guiding us, showing us, okay, this is why this has always been a problem. And what's interesting is we can be very familiar with the temperaments, the way the soul is put together, our own temperaments, our own flesh, our own crutches. And the very next week, we may run across something that we've studied for years, and all of a sudden, it's real. All of a sudden, it makes sense, or all of a sudden, it points to a real problem we're struggling with. And this is the way God gets our attention and shows us that this is an area that He's working with us to remove that flesh, even as we speak. And again, fortunately, God is fully aware of our inability to do so much on our own, and most of it has been built in by Him, but He exposes those things very often when 99% of it has already been done. So He will very often be revealing to you your flesh, your crutch, because He's already done 99% of the work of removing that flesh, removing that crutch. So we want to be aware, even as it's painful or difficult, we don't often like seeing that things that we have been relying on have been keeping us from living as the spirit being that God made us to be. Very often it's the things that we're the proudest of that are the biggest obstacles. and the things that we're the most unappreciative of, that God wants us to appreciate more. So it's all about hearing him, following his lead. He knows what your wounds are. He knows what lies you believe, and he knows how to heal you. And again, this is not about modifying your beliefs, modifying your behaviors. This is about healing your wounds so your soul can be engulfed in your spirit, so you can be one spirit, soul, and body. Just as he is one, we are brought back into that alignment that he originally created us to be here on this earth. And what's stopping us, basically, is the wounds, because it's the wounds that brought about the lies. It's through being wounded that we develop the lies. If something is not important to you, you don't believe it either way. It's not important to you, you're not going to remember it. But if it's important, it's important to us because it has a meaning behind it. This is true for doctrine, what we believe about ourselves, what we believe about God, what we believe about others. There's a reason behind it. Like if there was a doctrine out there that, you know, people who are taller than 12 feet tall are evil. Well, that there's nothing, nobody, you know, a normal person, there's no people that normally exist that are 12 feet tall or taller. So that doesn't really affect us. Who cares what somebody thinks? Who cares that somebody's trying to get that doctrine out there? It's irrelevant. But if somebody is out there saying that, you know, if you're born into a broken family, if your parents get divorced, you're less likely to have a successful marriage. If you believe that, that is going to affect your potential relationships. And so this is how we perceive ourselves, how we react to what we believe. And if we believe lies, which we all do, how those affect the crutches we develop to cope with them. And God knows what you need to be healed. So the more we cooperate with him, which always goes back to being able to hear his voice. Lord, is that you? Lord, here are the options here. A or B. And in a sense, getting to hear his voice is easy. Well, it's simple. It's not easy because it comes up against our controlling our own lives. But it's not complex. It's simple. It's spending time with him to give him the time to sharpen our senses. And then learning how to ask him questions. And then learning how to test it, and then acting on it. It's not that difficult. But we like to make it complex. Very often, because then we don't have to just listen and just respond. How simple is that? Lord, which direction do you want me to go in this place, in this situation? Very often, one of the challenges we have is that God really is leaving it up to us. We are so concerned and consumed with being in the right place at the right time that if we're in the perfect will of God, then nothing bad will ever happen to us. And that's one of those lies out there. That the reason, therefore, if something bad does happen to you, therefore, you must have done something to get out of God's will. You must be out of the will of God. rather than him wanting you to learn how to develop your judgment, how to make decisions. You are here on this earth to learn to rule and reign, to rule over your soul and your body, and to reign over your circumstances. You don't rule and reign over other people, but you rule and reign over your soul and your body, and you reign over your circumstances. Now, very often, people are part of those circumstances, but this is where it is greatly helpful to understand the temperaments so that we don't account for or give ourselves, we're either too hard on ourselves or too much leeway in making decisions. When we say, well, I'm avoiding making a decision in this area because I am melancholy, and this kind of a decision, I'm not feeling it, so I don't want to make a decision. And when we understand that, we can then go, okay, now that I know that, I'm putting that aside. And I'm going to take an approach, Lord, how do I make a decision about this? Not relying on my temperament. You don't get angry at yourself. You don't think, okay, God is wanting me to get rid of this emotion. It's simply, I'm not going to rely on my temperament to make this decision. And I'm not going to make it in spite of it. I'm going to make my decision knowing that God gave me the temperament he gave me. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not broken. It doesn't need to be fixed. But I'm going to go about my business of ruling in this situation and reigning over the circumstances. I'm going to make a decision, even if it's wrong, and reign over the circumstances. If I make a mistake, that's fine. We learn more by making mistakes than we do by making the right choice to begin with. So we do need, one of the big things we need to learn is to get off our own backs. So coming back to the temperaments, you are a spirit being. If you have been re-inspirited by God, you've been created a new creature, a new being. You now are a spirit. You have a soul, and you live in a body. Your soul came with certain characteristics, and God gave you those characteristics. So we've been talking about sanguine. We just have a little bit more finish up on the sanguine, and then we'll be moving into the melancholy. But we've been talking about the sanguine, and when we talk about the sanguines, the best way to just think about them is they are audience-oriented. They get their identity in that line. How do other people think of me? Am I getting the attention I want, or am I controlling what kind of attention I'm getting? And everything falls in one respect or another in that importance. That's what's important. And when you know that about a sanguine, you can take into account, or if you are a sanguine, you can take that into account as you make decisions. In other words, if there's a marriage relationship where one's perhaps a melancholy and the other's a sanguine, they may be coming at things from two totally different points of view. The goal is that the melancholy not let the sanguine get away with living out of their temperament and not taking seriously what's important to the melancholy, and vice versa. That the sanguine not let the melancholy wallow in their emotion and learn how to have fun. So this is where we begin to understand that it's helpful to understand what the temperaments are. Not that it's not just about us, but it's also about our relationships. That God has put us in relationships so that we can get a better handle on what needs to change in us. And in that kind of a situation, it's not about a weakness or something, an error, a correction that needs to be made. It's someone in your circumstances that's there to help you not be dependent on your temperament. So as that melancholy, that person who's always down in the dumps or is so easily swayed by how they are feeling, if they wake up, they're feeling bad, you know, things are going to be bad. And that sanguine comes down and everything's great and everything's beautiful, and that's the way it always is. Well, it's not a matter of the sanguine cheering up the melancholy, but helping the melancholy understand that they're going by their emotions and saying, look, for the melancholy to learn, for instance, look, just give me half an hour to wallow in whatever this is, and then I'll snap out of it. And then for the sanguine to say, okay, I'll leave you alone, and in half an hour, we'll start the day over again. This way, you're not trying to use your temperament to modify someone else's temperament, because that's the way God made them, and that's the way God made you, but you're not allowing that temperament to interfere with your relationship. And this is, you know, we always often hear about how God, you know, opposites attract. And, you know, to me, that's proof that God has a sense of humor. Marriage is proof that God has a sense of humor, because he takes people that are opposites and very often approach life from opposite points of view. And that's why there's that attraction there, is because somebody who's a melancholy and goes by their feelings really wants someone around that cheers them up. But after a while, it gets on your nerves. Unless you understand, look, this is just part of the circumstances that God has in my life for me to learn how to not live out of my temperament. So having said all that, as we talk about the temperaments, you're not, especially for married couples, you're not doing your spouse any good by letting them get away with their temperament. And this is especially true for wives, this whole idea of submitting to your husbands. God puts you with that person to help them learn how to not live out of their temperament. And if women have been, Christian women are being taught that that the wife has to submit to whatever the husband says. Well, that's exactly opposite. And I don't mean I'm going, you know, blanket statement here. You know, there's plenty of caveats and varieties of what people are being taught. But think of it in terms of the temperament. If the two of you have been put together, it's not so that one can be right and one can be wrong, or that one makes all the decisions and the other just follows along. It's so that you can both learn not to live out of your temperament, but that you can learn to live together as spirit beings, ruling over yourselves and reigning over your circumstances. It's a joint venture. You're going through this life together so that you can both overcome your wounds, recognizing that God has put you in a partnership. It's a special relationship in that it gives you the greatest potential to overcome the most in this earth, in this time frame. You're together the most amount of time, you know, sometimes 24 hours a day. You have the greatest history. You have the greatest future, those that are married. And then the kids and in-laws. It just gives you the greatest potential for getting the most work done while you are here on this earth. And in a lot of ways, that's why marriage is important. I know it's a very different perspective, but think about it. Think about what God really wants to accomplish. What does God really want to show the world? It's not about what a perfect marriage is. you know, what the heck is that? Your idea of a perfect marriage is not going to be what somebody else's idea of a perfect marriage is. It's who are you turning into? Who are you growing into? Is it someone who is more dependent on God? That's what people see. Are you becoming a more and more of an individual dependent on God? Are you becoming, do you have that confidence, that joy, that graciousness, that gratitude, that love in that relationship? So a lot of things change when we start thinking about how our temperament is there, is within us, in our soul, for us to overcome. Not to get rid of, but to accommodate, to adjust to rule over, to know when it's important to when it's not. Your temperament is integrated in your soul, but it's not your spirit. It's not who you are. So, back to sanguines. Sanguine, again, is all about the attention. And this is their strengths and their weaknesses. They can be people users. They can be shallow. They can be fun. And finally, they can be socially unacceptable. Their crutch, they can be rude. They can just be abrupt and in your face and very uncaring and unfeeling. So this is the opposite. When we think about somebody who loves their audience, they can be the exact opposite. When you think about a star that is out on the, you know, the stage where they are totally loved and adored, and they go backstage and perhaps there's the flowers aren't arranged properly and they have a temper tantrum. Or someone, you know, somebody says the wrong thing or laughs at the wrong time and they just might blow a gasket and are mean and rude to the people who know them behind the scenes. They might just be two totally different kind of people. And it's all about controlling their audience. So very often when fun flesh fails, the sanguine may become rude and interrupt conversations and plans that are already in progress. We talked last week about how if you make plans with a sanguine and it wasn't their idea, they may just make their own plans or interrupt yours. You may be getting everybody together to go see a movie. Well, you find out that everybody you've asked, they were talked into going and doing something else with this other person. And for, you know, who knows for what reason. But it gets to be a competition. It's because that other person, that sanguine, needs to control their audience. And that's the importance. That's how what value they put on people is not as individuals. Again, this is the temperament, not the person, not the spirit. But that person, people, their audience are not people. They are there. Their goal, their purpose is to meet the needs of the sanguine. So that rude sanguine can steer the conversation towards something they want to talk about. They want to steer the planning to something they want to do. If let's go do something Sunday, or let's go, you know, let's plan on going on vacation, and you want to go to the mountains and they want to go to the ocean, or, you know, pick something, and for once you want to go to the mountains, well, then they're not going to go. But they expect you to go to the ocean because that's where they want to go, even though they know that you don't want to go. And then even if you propose, well, how about we go to the mountains this time and next time we'll go to the ocean? No, because they want to go to the ocean. If you want to come, that's fine. But they're going to go to the ocean. And what we find is it is about control. And if that sanguine doesn't realize how they are perceived, that's where they end up with those shallow relationships and such strain in their personal relationships. This goes back to why it is not helpful for spouses and parents to not understand they are not doing their children any good by letting them get away with functioning out of their temperaments, letting them get away with using people as an audience and helping them to see things from other people's point of view. It doesn't mean you are necessarily going to be able to get your children to understand the other point of view. That's not the goal. It's very often not possible. The point is that to get, for all of us to understand that other people have different viewpoints and they are just as valid and beneficial and helpful as our viewpoint, as our perspective, as how we see the world. And I may not understand where you're coming from, and I can still go with you. As long as it doesn't, you know, contradict my values, it's not my job to fix your temperament or even to understand where you're coming from. If we're in a disagreement of some kind and you say, well, this is really the way, you know, it should be, or this is really what I think is going on, I may not understand how you're perceiving that. You know, this is very often with spouses. Well, I don't see, you know, why did what I said hurt you so much? It doesn't matter why what you said hurt so much. What's important is that it hurt. And this is where we get into these power plays. But as we understand, look, you don't have to understand why it hurt. Just say, I'm sorry it hurt. What can I do next time? What is it that I said that hurt you? And then if they say, all you need to do is call me if you're going to be late. That's all. But, you know, I was 5 minutes away. But all I need you to do, this just let it go. Okay, from now on, regardless of how far away I am, I will let you know if I'm going to be late. If I'm going to be 5 minutes late. That's, go with that. And this is where we are trying to incorporate our understanding of what God has really purposed for our lives into the practical. Make the most of these situations, these little situations, and then there, the big things we'll be ready for. So the sanguine, and you may notice this, you may have friends like this, but even in business meetings this happens, tons of situations. They may be the ones that become argumentative or belligerent or abusive in order to get attention. Even if there's been something that they were all on board with, if somebody else starts taking the lead on that, they may all of a sudden, well, start going the other way. Well, maybe it isn't such a good idea after all, because they want to be in control of the audience. Just as fun flesh draws attention by being entertaining and interesting, rude flesh, that rude crutch, draws attention by being biting and sharp. For some people, this can even become a way of life. And this is true for all the temperaments. We use the crutch that works. If a bad habit works, we will continue to use it as long as it works. Because for us, it's a good habit. It's working. So if being abusive is accepted, it will become a ready ally. It will become a useful tool. Rudeness can also be a helpful tool for getting a sanguine out of a situation where they are not getting enough attention. Perhaps someone has a more interesting story and is therefore getting more attention. What better out than to walk off in a huff over a perceived or a real slight from someone else? But as that person with the sanguine temperament receives healing and those lies are exposed and revealed and truth becomes evident, that person will become more able to submit to the love God himself has for himself and for others, and will be able to accept admiration and attention from others without relying on it as a validation of their identity. In other words, a sanguine will enjoy attention more because it's in the proper place. The admiration and the people giving it are no longer their only source of truth and comfort in this life. So next week we will start talking about the melancholy. And odds are melancholies will tune in because melancholies love to talk about themselves. Finding out more, love investigating, and love this, love stuff about the temperament, because it does help solve the mysteries. And those are all qualities of melancholy. So thank you for tuning in. Like I said, we'll pick it up there next weekend. If you've got any questions, you can always drop me a line at diane@wecanprepare.org. And thanks for tuning in. Have a great weekend.